Well, a few days ago, Sister Mina asked me if I can be here today on the fifth Saturday of this month to talk about religious liberty. What is your opinion about religious liberty? Is it a good thing? Is it a bad thing? How do you feel about that? It's a good thing. So it's a good thing that in the United States we have a separation between the church and the state, the government. Are you certain about that? So you agree with whatever the government is doing right now? Well, I know. It's a separation between the government and your faith, and your church. You just mentioned to me that you are in agreement with that. It is more complicated than what it seems, right? For once, we are appreciative that we have freedom to worship and look for God and in our own way. But also, maybe we had some disagreements when the decisions that the government is taking right now. Do every citizen of this country have religious rights? What is your opinion? They should have, or even when their religious beliefs are totally opposed to yours, contrary to your beliefs, do you agree with that? Do these people should deserve a right to? It's difficult in occasions. It depends on the group. You will ask, well, what are you talking about? For instance, we have people who worship Satan here in the United States. So you are telling me that they have the right to worship Satan in whatever manner they feel is appropriate for them. Are you in agreement with that? That's part of the religious liberty, right? Very good. However, we are noticing that in recent years, our society is changing a little bit. We have people now that is advocating for more involvement of the religious community into politics. You know, so how the church, the Seventh-day Adventist Church, stand or feel about religion and politics? What do you think that the church says about that? You should vote as a Christian? Are you engaged in politics? I hope that you do. It's important that you get involved in your politics and know about your communities and your schools and the things that are happening around you. Because otherwise, if you don't get involved, how you will oppose to say something about that? Right? That's your personal life. You should do that. Now, as a church, we don't endorse any political parties or any candidates or anything like that because we believe strongly we should stay away from that, as a church speaking. But in your personal level, you are free to vote for whoever you think is the best candidate. And I encourage you to research and engage in this political process. That's a beautiful thing here in America. In fact, one of the reasons that compelled me to become a U.S. citizen, one of the rights that I think is the most beautiful right, at least for me, is to have the opportunity to vote. You know, when was the last time that you vote? Think about it. Some people, they never go and they don't care. You know, but then later are complaining and, well, who elect this president or who elect this congressman? Well, you did. When you either vote or you didn't vote, you are supporting the process, you know. So use your voice and count. It doesn't matter if, you know, you win or lose in the election. It doesn't really matter. You are doing your civil duties. Now, the church believes strongly that we should have a separation between religion and state because the Bible tells us that every single time that when societies mix religion and political powers, bad things happen. It is always bad, right? For instance, think about this. Let's say that in a hypothetical case that Aiken was a completely Seventh-day Adventist community. Every single one in this town was a Seventh-day Adventist. Let's imagine that for a second. So what will happen to the fire department on Saturday? Who will go out to work? So if we have a fire on Saturday, we will let it burn? What about the police? If everybody will be a police officer here, or you say, well, we don't have a problem because it won't be crime, right? That's a very idealistic view. What about hospitals? If you get sick on Saturday, well, everybody's at church and nobody's working. It's just to give you an example between the ideal and reality. Society is moving in this reality that we always had to make some changes on auctions in order to preserve freedom and to preserve the opportunity for everybody to worship. But I want you to pay attention to this story that we find here in Exodus. Let's go to Exodus chapter 6, actually chapter 5. Exodus 5 tells us what happened to Israel when God sent Moses to start asking Pharaoh to let him go. You remember that story? And so the Bible tells us here in Exodus 5:1 this. Afterward, Moses and Aaron went and told Pharaoh, "Thus saith the Lord God of Israel, let my people go, that they may hold a feast for me in the wilderness." And Pharaoh said, "Who is this Lord that I should obey his voice and let Israel go?" Who is this God? "I do not know the Lord, nor I will let Israel go." Just very brief conversation there, right? God sent his messengers and talked to this important person in Egypt. He was kind of like the president, and not only the president, he was the spiritual leader of the nation. Because you remember, in Egyptian society, the Pharaoh was God. As since he was God, God don't make mistakes. Whatever decision that he made, everybody should abide for. And why is that the Israelites were in Egypt in the first place? Well, you need to go back in history and you will discover that God used Egypt and used Joseph to save the lives of the Israelites when they were having a big famine, a big hunger there. And that's how God preserved them. So the Israelites move and relocate in Egypt and start at the beginning a good relationship with the government and with everybody. They were treated nice. But when time was passing by and they would stay longer and longer, they end up being slaves. And you will wonder how that transition happened. Well, when you are staying in a place that you shouldn't, eventually people start taking, you know, advantage of you. And that's the situation here. So after 300 years of being there, they become slaves. Now they are no longer free to do anything. They have to obey whatever they tell them to do. Now, when you are a slave in a society that they used to have slaves, the person who is a slave, doesn't have any rights, correct? They don't have any freedom. They don't have any choices. It's like they are no human beings. They are property. They belong to someone. That's a horrible thing to do to a human being. And the Egyptians, they were famous because they have a very hierarchical and structured society, meaning that they were very divided. At the head of this society was Pharaoh and his family because he was God. There under Pharaoh, there was the priests and there were other people that they were connected with their religious activity. And then you had the soldiers. And then you had the merchants, and at the bottom was the slaves. So the slaves, they were like nothing. That's kind of like the dirt that they found in their roads. The slaves were used to building, to do construction, to do cleaning, to do labor, free labor, and all these things. So that's the situation for Israel. Now they are slaves. So the Egyptians were quite strongly opposed to let the slaves go because they were lose the people who was doing the majority of the work for them, right? Free of cost. Now, Moses and Aaron, they are arguing with Pharaoh and say, let Israel to go into the desert for how long? For 3 days. That's the first request, right? For 3 days. To do what? The Bible translated as a feast, but in reality can be like a festival or like a worship, like a spiritual ceremony. So what God is telling Pharaoh is saying, I had ownership of these people. They belong to me, and because I am a real God, they should come and worship me. But Pharaoh's response is, I don't know what. I don't know this God. I am God too. And I don't remember encountering this one. You see, it's a very interesting conversation here. It's like when somebody comes to you and say, well, the Lord revealed to me that you should do this. You know how you have these conversations with some people? It's kind of like strange, right? So what is your answer? Well, the Lord hasn't revealed to me. You know, maybe revealed to you, but when the Lord revealed to me, I would probably listen to what you're saying to me. We need to be careful in how we use our words. So this conversation between these individuals, Moses and Pharaoh, didn't end up well. Because Pharaoh said, I don't know who's your God, I really don't know him, and I won't let these people go. And what you want to do? I had the guns, I had the armies. What you want to do? What you can do? Well, what a normal and very intelligent person will do, you know, go home. You know, you're staying there, otherwise they will kill you. So that's what Moses did. When you continue reading in chapter 5, not only Pharaoh denied the slaves to go free, but also he made the situation worse. Because what the Israelites were doing in Egypt, the basic thing that they were doing is bricks. And the way that they made their bricks is they mixed the clay when grass, when other plants in there to make it stronger. But now Pharaoh is saying to the people who is doing the administration of the slaves, by the way, who were doing the slave administration? Another Jewish people. So some Jewish leaders were commissioned to mistreat their own people. They were like managing the whole bunch of people, the slaves. But now you are not supposed to help them and provide for them the materials that they need in order to produce the bricks. And on top of that, I want the same amount of bricks every day. That's what Pharaoh said. So in this discussion, in this conversation between God and Pharaoh, who is winning so far? Yeah. You're right. When you continue reading in chapter 5 and go to verse 22, this is what happened. That's how the leaders of the nation feel about Moses, you know, in gratitude for all the things that he was doing for them. Then as they came from out of Pharaoh, they met Moses and Aaron, who stood to meet them. And they say to them, let the Lord look on you and judge, because you had made us abhorrent in the sight of Pharaoh, and in the sight of his servants to put the sword in their hand to kill us. So the word abhorrent is translated in some Bibles, somebody who really smelled bad. So the original connotation is, if you really smell bad, nobody wants to be around you. You stink. That's what they are saying. That they were so smelly that now the Egyptians did want to kill them, right? It's interesting, when you read in Genesis 43, you found that for Egyptians, it was something really bad to eat when a foreigner, much less when a slave. You read that in Genesis 43, verse 33. You can look at it later. Joseph, in Joseph's story, he's telling that the Egyptians, they didn't eat when foreigners, and men, less when slaves. That was something that they consider unclean and really bad. So now you have this group of slaves that they are really angry because they are work harder and they had to keep making the same production. And you have this person in the government who is making their lives very difficult. Speaking of religious liberty, right? They were free to worship God. Do you agree? So why God was interested in getting Israel from Egypt? Why? The bottom line is because when you are a slave, you have a master over you, who rule over you. And these have a connotation with salvation. In Romans chapter 6 and 7, Paul said that the biggest problem for humanity is sin. And Paul said in Romans that sin is like a really bad master. I remember when we were studying this with Kenny and Gabriela here in Romans. You remember? And because sin is a master, he rules over you, he controls you, he doesn't let you serve God with your heart. You belong to sin. You are a slave to sin. Or we used to be slaves, I should say, including me, to sin. But now, God had made a plan and had introduced something that is called grace. And grace gives you the power to be free. So now you can serve God instead of serving sin. You belong to God now. God is your master now. You had a choice, right? So Paul is arguing, as long as we are slaves of sin, we cannot really keep the law. Right? Because the moment that you commit a sin, you are breaking the Ten Commandments. Correct? So pay attention to this part. I want to make a connection here. When God is inviting Israel to come to the desert to worship Him, I want to keep in mind that worship includes many things. It's more than singing and praising. It's more than praying. Right? For us as a Seventh-day Adventist, worship is also a day. Right? Based on what? Biblically speaking. In the fourth commandment. Right? God saying in the fourth commandment that we should keep what? Many things are connected with the Sabbath. For instance, when the Sabbath was created. You need to go back to Genesis 2. When the week of creation, right? So the Sabbath is created in a time where sin wasn't ruling over humanity. Correct? It was created by God. Why we worship in Saturday, in Sabbath? Why? Well, in part because it's a signal to creation. But in reality, it's an act of faith. Think about this. What is the fifth commandment? Seventh-day Adventist. Honor your father and what? Why? Why you should honor them? Well, because it's a sign of respect and love for your parents, number one. But if you do that, then you will have a blessing in your life, right? What is the blessing? Your life will be extended in this planet, right? When you pay attention to the commandments, the majority of them have a justification, a reason for. What is the reason for the Sabbath? Think about that. It's not really a reason. We have some connections that we made, but it's not a reason. God can select any other day, right? So what you're doing when you keep the Sabbath is saying, listen, I had my faith in God. This is what God said in the Bible, and I'm obeying it. No explanations. That's it. That's bottom line. Why do you keep the Sabbath? Very good. God told us to do it. We had many other reasons, right? We know that God made the Sabbath holy. And as extension, if you keep the Sabbath, that will make you holy too. It's a set time separated to worship God. It's a time where God make it important for have worship and communion with you. He wants to spend time with the worshipers and communion with God. But when you are reading the Ten Commandments, for instance, in Deuteronomy 5, what is the reason in Deuteronomy 5 for the Sabbath? In Exodus 20, the reason for the Sabbath is creation, right? We should remember the Sabbath because God created everything in 7 days, 6 days, and He rested the 7 day. Now, what is the reason in Deuteronomy 5 for keeping the Sabbath? Slavery. So it's a lot of lessons in there. What lessons? For instance, every single human being had dignity in front of God, had value. You had the right to worship God. No one can take that away from you. God gives you that right. That's interesting, right? Even servants and slaves, according to the law, should have the right to rest and Sabbath. Beyond that, animals too. So God cared for animals? Do God care for the planet? Yes, creation is included in the Sabbath too. The principles of taking care of the planet and the animals and other persons, they are included in this commandment. So it's a deep thing in there when you start reading about the Sabbath. So what Israel was asking for was, let us go so we can worship God and Sabbath. And what was the response? No. When you continue reading in Exodus, this battle between God and the king of Egypt and Pharaoh, you discover that it's getting bad, and then it's getting worse, and it's really, really bad for Egypt, right? The longer they oppose God, the worse things get for them. To the moment that they finally give up because they were getting killed by God, you know, like destroyed completely. Because you cannot take that right for any other person. That belongs to God. When you are keeping the Sabbath, you are giving God the right to claim ownership over you. Because He's your creator. And you are acknowledging that. Is anyone here being forced to keep the Sabbath? It's your choice. You decided to do it. Nobody's forcing you to do it. You can worship God whenever you want to. But if you want to follow what He said in the Bible, then you have to do it in the Sabbath. Because God says so, right? So when people tell you, no, I worship on Sunday because that's when Jesus resurrected, that's not what the Bible says. I worship on Monday because that's more convenient for me. Well, it's convenient for you, but that's not what God says. I decide to do this and worship every single day. Well, that's good. But the important day is the Sabbath, because that's what the law says there. So religious liberty, in reality, is your opportunity to worship God according to your free will. And nobody can take that from you. Many years ago, being a student in South America, in Colombia, and I ask you to forgive me if I tell you this story before. No, I don't remember. I think I didn't. But if I did, you pretend that you haven't heard it before. You are good actors. Huh? Good. So many years ago, being a student in high school, at the last year, the government there, they require every single student to take something similar to the SATs here. And the results of this exam will allow you to enter college, or they will say, no, your level of academic level is not enough to get in college. They give you as many opportunities as you want to retake the exam, as long, you know, until you feel happy. It's similar to the SATs. The problem is that the exam is on Saturdays. And I was the only Seventh-day Adventist member in my family, and we didn't have a lot of money at a time. So the government make an exception for Seventh-day Adventists in that country, and that the exception was something like this, that all the students from all the schools in the country had the opportunity to go to the Adventist University for this weekend, and after sunset on Saturday, they will start taking the exam. That was the only exception. So I remember thinking about that and being newcomer and recently baptized, and I spoke to my mother and said, listen, I want to do this. I want to go to the Adventist college to present the exam. And my mother's answer was, but we don't have the money to pay for the expenses of the trip. Because the city where we live was near the border in Venezuela, and the city of the exam was like 24 hours in a bus. It's a quite long distance. So that implies some expenses. So mom say, no, you cannot go there. Regardless of what my mother say, I just fill the paperwork. And in my paperwork, I request that I want to present my exam at the Seventh-day Adventist University. I didn't have the money. I didn't know how to do it. But I was hoping that God would provide for me. The day finally arrives, and I didn't have the money, so I didn't go. Neither to the university, nor to present the exams on Saturday in my school. Some of my Seventh-day Adventist friends, they did the exam on Saturday. I'm not judging anyone. It's your choice. Right? And I thought that it was good to honor God in keeping the Sabbath, so I didn't want to present the exam on Sabbath, so I didn't do it. Some of my friends tell me, well, you're stupid. Who cares? Look at you now. You don't have the results, and you cannot enter in college. You can do anything with your life. And it was, to be honest, a strong test for my faith. I didn't know how God will put the things together, but I feel like a little let down by God, you know, because He didn't answer my prayers. Well, finally, time passed. I finished my high school. I moved to another city. I started working. And again, the same time of the year arrived, so I filled the paperwork. Again, this is years after I graduated from high school. And at the time, I was able to save the money and finally go and test the exam and pass the exam. Well, a decent note. I mean, it wasn't like an exceptional, you know, result, but it was a decent to allow me to enter any university in my country. What I'm telling you this, the reason that I'm telling you this is not to present myself as a great, you know, Sabbath keeper, the only one who keeps the Sabbath. No. What I'm trying to present to you is that keeping the Sabbath have a cost. My question to you is, are you willing to pay the cost? You know, if you work for somebody in the government, if you work for a company, they would probably ask you to work on Saturday. That's your choice. Are you doing it? You know, it's between you and God. But I will advise you to be faithful to God. That's part of being free, right? So this weekend that we are speaking about religious liberty is that choice that you have to worship your God the way that you think is the right way. And I commend you if you are keeping the Sabbath, because I know it's difficult. I was talking to somebody here, I won't say who, but this person mentioned to me that because the Sabbath, he didn't get a raise, more money. So you get discrimination and you get exposed to many things at work, you know, that other people don't receive it. But you are trying to be faithful to God, right? So let God take control of the matters. Amen? So in a society that is changing today, when people is talking about, you know, getting involved between religion and politics, one of the reasons that we stand about religious separation between the state and the government is because we believe in prophecy. And I want to make this my last point of the sermon today. What is the message of Revelation 14? Don't give me the details, but you remember. What is Revelation 14 speaking of? Very good. Revelation 14 is speaking of the three angels' message. Right? When you read Revelation 14, verse 9, you discover that the last message from the third angel is that we need to worship God, right? Because the hour of the judgment has finally arrived. Correct? Now, Revelation 14 is right there after a very interesting chapter, which is Revelation 13. And Revelation 13 is speaking about how the beast will use political power to oppress the people of God. Right? Because when a group takes control of the government, they can do a lot of damage to the minorities. And we have to remember that eventually the people who will persecute you and will create more problems for you will be Christians. in the name of God, thinking that they are doing the good things for the Lord. Because these are really bad combinations when you had political power mixed with religion. Look at history. Every single time that you had a king or president or somebody who had political power when religious power, it's not good. Never end good. So after this description in Revelation 13 that the beast will use political power to make everyone worship and receive the mark, you remember that? In the hand or forehead, then you encounter the message of the three angels, which is worship God, which is the creator, which reminds you of what? When you read in Revelation 14, you get reminded of the language of the Sabbath. It's very similar. And I'm not the only one saying this. A lot of scholars say that when you are reading Revelation 14, the language in there is very similar to the one that you have in Exodus 20. Remember the Sabbath because God created the heavens and earth in 6 days. It's very similar. And it's about worship. Again, how interesting is that? So keep in mind that worship eventually will be a big deal. And the question for you is, what you will do? What the majority is telling you to do? What the government is telling you to do? Or you will finally have to stand for what you believe? And if taking a stand for what you believe implies going to jail, you will do it. Being expelled from work or persecuted by your own family, you will do something like that. That's really the heart of religious liberty. The choice that every person has to worship God according to their own conscience. So may God bless you and keep helping you to making the right choices. Because, like I mentioned before, you know, if we believe in prophecy, this is what the Bible has revealed to us, it will happen at the end. You know, this conflict, again, between God and the enemy, between you and the right decision. So I hope that God help you and to make the right choices during this week. Amen.